and Wraith.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Hate to step in on Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, but got to get Rich Migliori in here. And Mig, this has been a long delayed visit. You had the snow knocked you out on Monday, and you tied up yesterday's. And I've only got a couple of minutes with you now, either.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got to keep this appointment in a few minutes, but I'm glad I was able to jump on. I caught a little bit of the show on my drive here and heard Tim Cassidy. And, you know, there's so many people out there that I just have such really, really nice relationships with and good memories. And, you know, John Sheriff's, obviously. I know he was on earlier. I didn't get to hear that. And Jim and, you know, David Hoffman's, Bill Spard, Janine Sahadi. Just so many people that really... Jack Rabbit, who's an agent now, is a tremendous trainer. So many people out there that really embraced me and gave me an opportunity, and you know, at a time in my career when I was certainly on the back nine.
Well, the back nine, but you won a Breeders' Cup. You had plenty of success. I think a Pack Classic too. No.
Yeah, Pacific Classic for Vladimir Serin, another guy I just think the world of and had, you know, great success with. And yeah, I didn't ride a lot of horses for Vladimir, but Rode Leonides, won a couple stakes on him.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously Student Council. Our percentage together was very high. And, it was a really wonderful experience. And the thing about Santa Anita, too, and obviously Saratoga does it well, but, Santa Anita could be a template for how you should embrace the history of the sport and the way they commemorate so many of the participants, equine and human, with the statues and even that facade on the back of the building. If you look at it, you can pick up where
yep.
George Wolfe is going down in the first turn. Like that's depicted in the facade in the back from the paddock, and you can look for it and you'll find it. You'll see it. It's there.
It came up earlier today. I brought it up with sheriffs. That's funny you reference it.
And again, look at the backdrop. I mean, you get the mountains. It's just, when I was a kid, like, growing up in Brooklyn, my grandfather gave me a big coffee table book of Shoemaker, the shoe, and it had all these amazing pictures in it. And, I would always think about that and dream about it. Then, of course, Bill Shoemaker gives me my Eclipse Award. I was in Japan for the Japan Cup with him. And then, in the book, my grandfather wrote, "I'm sure you could do as good as him." Well, I've had about a half as many winners, but, I was still that little kid getting an opportunity to ride at the great race place.
Well, and, you have a funny story, right? About the flight over about going to the Japan Cup.
Well, it was in Japan, actually. There's a couple of stories going there. We landed in Alaska to refuel. And, I'm 16 years old. This is the second flight I've ever taken in my life. I'm going to Tokyo to ride the first Japan Cup. And we never left the airport. And I was with Mrs. Asmussen and Cash, his mom, Marilyn and Cash, and she was really nice because, it was a bit overwhelming for a kid by himself flying there. And she kind of snapped the lead shank on me and ponied me, through it. Just whatever her and Cash was doing, she was including me in it. And I was asking her in the airport, "Does this mean I can say I've been in Alaska?" Because, check off another state you've been to. I never left the airport. I was in Alaska before. 45 minutes. It was a good story with Shoemaker, though, in Japan that I'm not going to share on air, but I will tell you privately.
I you must have already done that because I know that in the back of my mind I'm recalling that there was a fun story involved.
It's quite a memory.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It seems that every trip, any trip to the you can't call it the Orient anymore, to Asia. Next time you see Chuck Simon, Chuck's got a great story about the hotel when he went to Hong Kong with Caller One. And they got handed a bill for like $17,000.
Well, I remember even back then, 1981, I went to get a Snickers bar in the hotel, and it was like $2 for a Snickers bar in 81. And I was like, wow. But I really wanted that Snickers, so I got it anyway. you think about me growing up watching Bill Shoemaker, and then he came in to ride Spectacular Bid in the walkover in the Woodward. And I was a 10-pound bug that, at that point, I hadn't even won my first race yet. And it was such a big deal because Shoe's here, Bill Shoemaker's here, And got done riding, and I actually went up to the mile and a quarter platform to watch Spectacular Bid break and gallop around in a mile and a quarter in 2:02 under just a canter. And I remember I was like, "Shoe didn't put his goggles down. Like, maybe he should put his goggles down," even though it was, it was basically just a public workout. But I, for some reason, that always stood out in my head. And the one part of the story in Japan I will tell you is the first adult beverage I ever had was in Tokyo with Bill Shoemaker after the Japan Cup. So that's pretty cool, actually have your first drink with Shoe.
Yes, that's about as good a memory for that as anybody's going to come up with.
Then a couple years later, I flew into Hollywood Park to ride the Hollywood Gold Cup for on win for Sally Bailey. Paul Kornman owned him, and Paul wanted to grab some dinner before we caught the red eye back to New York in Santa Monica. So I told the valet, and I had the same valet as Shu, you know, listen, I'm going to be in a big hurry. I've got to get out of here. We're going to grab dinner before the flight. And after the race, I finished second on win to Zoffany. Got through on the rail. We beat Van Landingham. Probably cost us a turf champion. I think they gave it to Cozine, who, if we had beaten fair and square with Wynn in Saratoga, Wynn was honestly on the square was a better horse. But I come out of the shower and, like, you know, he had already packed my bag, and I'm going to blitz out to the parking lot to meet Paul and go grab dinner. And I go to grab my shoes, and my shoes were nailed to the wooden bench. And Shu had gone out to ride the next race, and he did it to slow me down as a joke. So I had to get a hammer, knock these nails out of my shoes. So now I got holes in my shoes. And a couple weeks later in the mail, I get actually, he sent it to Belmont. Aqueduct. Brand new Bruno Mali shoes to replace the shoes that were probably, like, you know, hush puppies or something.
Some Tom McCann $18 specials.
Exactly. But I had Bruno Mali shoes from Bill Shoemaker, you know, but he was a, you know, a notorious prankster. And again, you know, having those kind of experiences, and again, thinking about that little kid falling in love with the game. And I've still got that book, and the pictures just amazing in that backdrop. And then again, getting the opportunity to go there and experience that and basically walk on that hallowed ground and all the greats. And, you know, again, I'll go back to statues, you know, Charlie Whittingham, this dog, and Lafitte, and, you know, the whole thing. It's just really embodies what I love about racing, and Santa Anita absolutely embraces that to the fullest. And, you know, again, Saratoga, you get the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, and Saratoga is all about history, and not just racing, I mean, American history too. But I wish more tracks would really embrace that, because I think it captivates people.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you know, in your time involved in the broadcasts and in the various responsibilities that you've enjoyed with NYRA, you know, that included those history minutes that were so much fun. We should reboot those, or at least run the ones that you had when the different states.
Well, we're working on something right now, Steve. It's I'm really excited about this great kid, Eldon, that I work with, and Ernie Munich. We've done the research. He's done most of the research. But where all of the race courses were in New York, in the Bronx, in Brooklyn, in the other courses in Queens, one in Hempstead on Long Island. And we're going to each location and going to, like, introduce what is there now as opposed to what it was when. And Near East Tavern, that the scene from Goodfellas was shot in that. That was the site of the old Jamaica race course, I believe. And we're going to all these spots. Listen, I grew up supposedly where Gravesend racetrack was. I mean, you know, it was streets and housing, you know, row houses by then, but so we're going to kind of explore the history of all the racetracks in New York, and there were a lot of them at one time.
Oh, that's fun. You're going to go up to, like, Morris Park and...
Yeah, Morris Park, Jerome Park, Coney Island, you know, there was Brighton Beach. We're gonna hit it all up, and this is like a labor of love for us because we're all really into the history of that.
Oh, well, Ernie, I mean, Ernie loves it. That sounds like a total winner. This has got... I smell awards.
Well, listen, I've got to get inside. I'm so sorry to cut this short, but I'll talk to you next week.
Well, all right, next week, and we got to talk about Madison Oliver.
Absolutely. I got, you know what, that'll be a really good topic next week. I've been working with her a lot, and she's going to be okay.
Oh, it sure feels like it. And there's also another one that's actually making big inroads too. That's Sophia Veras. And then you fold in Gage Holmes. It feels like there's a new wave of young female riders that are all pretty ticketed toward success. So we'll do that.
All right, sounds good, Steve. Again, I apologize.
No, not at all. Not at all. Rich Migliori, everybody. Good to get a visit in with Mig, as promised, and covered a lot of ground there, to say the least. It gives us about 20 minutes. I'm looking for Nate, and I can't believe we're gonna break camp here and not have a chance to talk to Nate Newby. Huh. All right. Well, if he can turn up in the next 20, we'll slap him on. Otherwise, next week we will do a meet preview with him instead on phone. That'll have to suffice. I'm hearing from Dale over at Remington, getting things lined up. Because I don't actually get into, you know, one of the challenges flying west to east. You know, you lose some time. So I think I'm on a 2:30 out of here, and so I don't get I get to Oklahoma City about 9. So I'm going to swing by the track. They'll be running, and get to make sure everything, you know, is up and going for the morning. So Remington tomorrow. And Friday, and we'll have the fields, we'll have the whole state card drawn at Remington as well, so we'll do all of that. We'll get Seth. Let me grab Seth Merrow, and I think, you know, as it happens with Seth, if I'm not mistaken, the week is flying by here. It's already Wednesday, and I have not acknowledged some of the terrific pushes we got last Friday on Weekend Preview, and I think Seth had a nice winner or two that he gave out, and so did Marcus Hirsch. And I know Marcus had Touched Upon a Star. We talked to Jake Delhomme yesterday, and there was that Juniper horse at Gulfstream. You gave that out, didn't you, Seth?
I don't know. It all runs together. I can't remember what I was talking about on Friday. I had a nice overall weekend at Oaklawn. Sunday, there was a race. Campisi, maybe the name of the horse, 18-1. It was my top pick, and just got nudged, or I would have had the 18-1 shot on top of a cold super, which was just was frustrating because just got caught, but my top two were flip-flop there, so it still wound up to be a good result at Oaklawn. But yeah, Oaklawn, I like Oaklawn anyway, and so it was a great way to kind of kick things off down in Arkansas.
How did you deal with the wet track? What because I did handicap for Saturday, and for starters, there was the Moquette. In fact, we talked to him yesterday, and he had that Spurrier at a big price. But the wet, I basically just said, all right, the wet track, I looked at Friday's opening day results, and I figured it looked like if the horses were good enough, they could come from off the pace. But how did you handle the wet track?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was an ideal way to kick things off weather-wise, but I just went, you know, straight. Looked at it and just kind of handicapped straight. You know, if somebody was jumping off with wet track form, you know, you throw them into the mix. But otherwise, I wasn't changing things up too much regarding pace or whatnot, because it's always the first, really any track when the season opens, the first couple of weeks, you're just kind of feeling your way around anyway. And so if you make things work the first week or two, that's just a bonus. But you're trying to find out who's going to be a little bit hot on the human side and how things will play out pace-wise and whatnot. Ron Moquette got off to a nice start, certainly, at the meet. No question about that.
Well, and Moquette with the four wins and all maidens, too. Two maiden claimers, two maiden specials. I happened to have received from Ron in the last hour. We'll have to do something with him. I'll have to get the details maybe tomorrow while we're at Remington. Jimmy Garratt, who was just a week shy of his 90th birthday, passed away this morning at 4 a.m. at home. 3 days before his 90th. And we'll get... they were going to have a surprise party for his 90th. But Jock and a just an institution in and around Hot Springs. So we'll probably get Ronnie back on, and maybe Jerry Hissom, and you know, some of the appropriate parties. So I wanted to pass
that kind of stuff this time of year. That's true.
Holiday wise, well. All right. I wanted to mention, and we'll get more details. You also came up, unbeknownst to you, Tom Law. We somehow got around to talking about Foxborough and Schaefer Stadium, and we did a little beer commercial. I performed the jingles to Schaefer and Rheingold, which I trust you could probably do too. But he then texted me, Seth. He said he didn't get a chance to talk about Tom and Jerry, and I started to laugh knowing you were going to be on, because Tom and Jerry punch, a topic that confounded you.
Exactly. That was all news to me. But you talk about beer and you throw in Schaefer and those. And where you were, was Utica Club a thing? You remember Vince and Dooley?
Of course.
The talking mugs?
Right. Schultz and Dooley, not Vince.
Yeah, you're right. Schultz. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Vince,
that's right.
Vince Dooley was the coach of Georgia.
I knew there was a Vince Dooley. I knew somehow that would. That's great. Yeah, Schultz and Dooley. I would guess if you go to YouTube, there's probably a Schultz and Dooley commercial floating around out there for folks who don't remember. Because that was just this section of the country. I mean, it was literally Utica Club. I remember as a kid, I visited the brewery. The adults got free beer. The kids got root beer.
Well, you're hitting me in my wheelhouse, because I have the Schultz and Dooley steins that are very collectible. There's many, many series of Schultz and Dooley mugs, and you know, Schultz is the tall German Braumeister and Burgermeister. And Dooley is the little Irish. He's got the shamrock on his chest, and they're quite cool. And there's not just Schultz and Dooley. There's a whole series of characters from Utica Club that include. There's a policeman, and there's a whole collection, and the mugs go back, you know, to the 40s, 30s and 40s, and there's various, you know, eras of the mugs. But you talk about that tour, and by the time that I toured it Utica Club was still around, but it was more Matt's, the FX Matt Brewing Company. And my late friend John Hubbard, who, you know, grew up in Utica, Hubs took me up when I was at Colgate. I was pitching Matt's on sponsoring the hockey team. I was the hockey broadcaster at Colgate, and tried to get them to pay for calendars and sponsor the show on radio and that kind of thing. And so I went and made a pitch to one of the Matt's family members. And then John took me downstairs, and we went on the tour. And then you end up in that bar, essentially, and they give you free beer. And John and I proceeded to get absolutely hammered, and I will never forget it. I mean, there was a girl, you know, drawing the beer, and then we went. Then we went downstairs out the door, and there was a kind of like a Blarney Stone style sandwich and bar joint, and we kept drinking down there. How we made it back to Hamilton, I have no idea, but it's one of my fondest memories with John. Just unbelievable, the Utica Club tour. We used to, at that time, Seth, you would get they would have those ponies, the little 7-ounce ponies.
Right.
And Genesee did too, with the Jenny Cream. And you would get 7 for a dollar during happy hour at the bars in Hamilton. 7 for a dollar.
Can't beat that.
No. those were the days. Well, you steered me right off the cliff.
It's part of my job,
right? Well, and you know, I'm not coming back from Kentucky, so I can't send you the picture of the Tom and Jerry Bowl at Schwabel's. Schwabel's offers Tom and Jerry year round, actually.
I think I've gotten that picture before, though.
I have. I've sent you that.
Yeah.
Whenever this topic comes up, it's like an eggnog. It's like a nog. Are there, you know, that's a loaded question, Seth. Are there other kinds of nog beside egg?
Geez, that's a good question.
Right? Do you ever hear anybody refer to nog with anything other than egg?
No, but what would the alternative be? Like a ham nog?
I think this is the topic, the challenge of the day, folks. Please let us know, are there other nogs? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say there are other nogs beside egg.
Or other versions of egg, like a duck eggnog.
Well, now, you want to talk about outside the box. I mean, that just went, that was over my head if I jumped. wow, duck eggnog. I mean, is there? Have you ever made eggnog at home, like from scratch?
No, because I'm not a big eggnog fan. As I've become older, I've gotten so I can drink it, but it was never one of my holiday. It was not on the holiday hit list.
That's actually a great topic. You know, I see these questions on Twitter. There's that one guy that asks the music questions all the time. He must come up with 12 a day. I don't know how he does it, but. There, a lot of times they're fun to answer, but what is something as an adult, as you've gotten older, you've come to eat or drink that you hated when you were younger, that you now have come to like?
And everybody has something.
I've got a couple. I've got two things. I got maybe three things that I can think of. Do you want? Is there something that comes to mind with you, or should I start? I guess you want me to start.
Oh, I'm losing. You're all staticky, so I'm only getting part of the. I'm starting with something that as a kid I didn't like, and now I do.
Yeah.
Well, eggnog is certainly one of them. I have to think about it. Because there definitely are things. Yeah, you can start.
I'll give you a cereal that when I first tried it as a kid, I was like, you got to be kidding. Why is this popular? And now I love. And that's Wheaties.
Oh.
Wheaties. I remember my dad who ate them, and my dad had the trifecta of breakfast cereal: cornflakes, Wheaties, and Cheerios. Those were his three, and he did not get more inventive. But the Wheaties, I would eat the cornflakes and the Cheerios, but not the Wheaties. Now I absolutely love Wheaties.
I'm not a big breakfast guy, so cereal wouldn't be. When I was a kid, I didn't like eggs. Now I'm scrambled eggs. I'm all about the egg. But when I was a kid, I didn't like eggs. No, and speaking, this one's strange. I didn't like meatloaf when I was a kid.
Interesting. See, meatloaf scored with me early. My mother made a great meatloaf, so I always liked meatloaf. I'll give you a soda flavor that same thing. I never liked as a kid, and now I love, and that's black cherry.
What is it?
Black cherry.
Oh, I don't think I've ever tried it. There are some things that I haven't broken out of the mold yet of not having tried my whole life.
It is seemingly hard to believe that in your 50s or even 60-ish. Actually, hi, you're a mystery. No one knows how old you are. You're like Vince Gregory, Vince DeGregory. I talked about earlier. We're gonna have to cut you in half and count the rings. How old are you? I have no idea. If somebody came up to me and said, you know, how old is Seth? It would be like,
I think I'm either your age or a year older.
All right, because you'd be like Carol Alt or Cindy Crawford. That no one has a clue how old they are.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm the supermodel of horse race handicappers.
That's for sure. Well, it's hard to believe that you could be 60. I'm 63, so it'd be hard to believe that you'd be 62, 63, or 64, and never had a Dr. Brown's black cherry or cot.
I don't even know where I'd buy that.
You got to be kidding. Boylan, you could buy black cherry soda literally in every single convenience store in America.
Really? Okay. Well,
what's your where do you come down on Dr. Pepper?
I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I'm grudgingly. I mean, literally, if there's some bizarre scenario where you walk into a store and it's the only soda, I was parched beyond description. I guess I could, you know.
I don't even know if I pull the trigger then. I deal with chocolate milk.
we had the grandkids for Thanksgiving, and I got them Battenkill Valley, which makes an unbelievable chocolate milk. And the kids went crazy; they went berserk. They literally, the two of them, downed two bottles of. Wait. Seriously, get up here. Nate Newby's gonna and Amy Zimmerman's gonna join us here with 40 seconds left in the show. Seth, good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Good luck to everybody.
Seth Merrow, everybody, and we got a coffee. Jim Cassidy spilled coffee over everything. There you go. Better Nate than sorry, but I'm bummed. Nate Newby, good morning.
Good morning,
Amy. I just saw you. I just saw you in Arizona.
Welcome.
Well, thank
it's
you.
It's good to see
and
you.
And you can say goodbye in about 4 minutes.
We'll go quick. We got a lot to cover. So.
Let me see. I was right. We have 4 minutes. What? You're getting ready for opening, and we certainly can fill out the rest of the blanks next week ahead of opening day. But give us a thumbnail sketch. It feels like everybody's excited and everything's in place.
Yeah, there's good energy coming into the meet, so everybody's excited. We're putting the finishing touches on getting the facility ready and all the things the team does to get this place going. But you know, the grass course looks great. The main track's good. We're ready to roll. It'll be the day after Christmas. They're expecting a big day.
Well, and in fact, the one thing I didn't get to do today, Brad Free yesterday in the form with the details and the expectation on the opening day fields of the biggest races, the Malibu, the La Brea, the Oaks, of course, the Mathis, the Mile, the San Antonio, and the San Gabriel. And, you know, we've actually hit on a few. Sheriffs was with us this morning, and a couple others came up that they anticipate starts, you know, over the last week that they were pointing for, and even some horses that are coming out fairly quick out of Del Mar assignments that they're going to come run right back on 3 weeks rest.
Now the racing team has been working hard, and we've got some shippers coming in or that they expect to come in, and we're, you know, six graded stakes. We're starting off with a bang, but it looks like we're going to be ready to roll in good fields, and it should be a strong day.
Well, of course, the Malibu and the La Brea, the last opportunities for three-year-olds exclusive. Let's give a quick survey in terms of the checkpoints Nate, for some of the key dates in terms of Big Cap and Santa Anita Derby Day, and what's our schedule layout?
Yeah, it's typical. I mean, Big Cap Day is going to be the first Saturday in March, or might be the second Saturday now, second Saturday, and then Santa Anita Derby is the first Saturday in April, and so we're going to take a break. That Santa Anita Derby weekend is Santa Anita Derby Saturday, obviously Easter Sunday, and then the next weekend we'll take off, so that'll be kind of our spring break, and then
good.
We'll come back. The first half of the meet we're calling the Classic Meet, and then the spring meet will finish out into the Triple Crown season and through the third week of June, so 6 months of racing with 1 weekend off, basically.
How about the biggest, the highlight of the contest season for everybody, and one of the absolute top venues for the horse players to target and to come, and with Quigley basically hosting everybody and the Eddie Logan Suite, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, we've got a very busy contest schedule this year, starting with opening day with a live money contest, and there's going to be feeders leading into Pegasus, and then we go right into a busy spring for Santa Anita. So almost every weekend there's something going on. Best advice is go to the website, look at the calendar, and the contests just continue to grow, continue to get bigger, and the players love them. There's good value for players, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. The group here and the camaraderie that's coming back post-pandemic and having the players back on track playing. I mean, we love the fact that they were playing on Express Bet during the downtime or during the pandemic time, but it's really fun to have them back. And you can't beat the atmosphere in Eddie Logan or one of the other areas around the track when it's coming down to the last couple races and guys are firing and they're talking strategy, and it's just so much fun.
Well, and in terms of getting treated fabulously on site, it's really, you know, for those, again, that if you're planning the visit here, we were talking about telling people to come out for the morning action at Clocker's Corner, but the opportunity to play in contests on site, coordinate your travel schedule. We'll do some racing department stuff with Chris next week, but betting menu, basically everything.
Well, real quick, back to incentive to be on site. There's a $5,000 bonus if you're on track for opening day. So if you're planning to play in the contest, make the trip out. If you win the contest, there's an extra $5,000. So
nice.
We're trying to give you reasons to be here. Plus, unfortunately, we're on radio right now. You can't see what we're looking at, but this is a pretty spectacular view, and it's well worth your while, even if you don't win and pick up the extra $5,000. We'll take good care of you.
No doubt. Betting menu, everything pretty much?
Betting menu's pretty similar. We got some guarantees on opening day, $750,000 for the pick five. Those pools are massive for the late pick five. $500,000 for the late pick four. We should exceed those, and we're ready to roll.
Nate Newby, everybody, and opening day now, 12 days away? And
12 days and counting.
Yeah.
It's going to be a busy 12 days.
And opening day draw a week from today.
Yes, absolutely.
21st. Nate, thanks for it was great to spend these 3 days. Hopefully when we're back after the first of the year, temperatures might break 50 when we come back.
We're thinking so, yes. Although probably a lot of areas in the country that don't feel bad for us.
That's true, especially with what's coming. Got to pull up and head out to Remington. We'll be in Remington tomorrow and Friday. Thanks to Nate and everybody at Santa Anita. Thanks to Jim Cassidy today and John Sheriffs as well, and Eric Hamelbeck, Mig, who stopped by, and everything else that went on this morning. Talk to you tomorrow from Oklahoma City, everybody. Thanks so much.
Nice.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our